for the touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango.
Tonight on the show, I am super honored to be interviewing a living legend. Woo-hoo! He is probably my favorite golden age of porn actor, performer, but he's so much more than that. He is an author. He is a comedian. He is a friend. And he is truly an awesome person, and I just want our audience to get to know him today. So please welcome the legend, Howie Gordon.
Can you see that I'm blushing at home? I mean, I'm, you know, Jesus. It's like, stop it, some more.
Oh my goodness. So let's see. Okay. For those out there that haven't read your book, which is amazing, I read a lot of adult film autobiographies. I'm holding on to my giant copy here too. Who haven't read Hindsight, which is True Love and Mischief in the Golden Age of Porn. Where did you grow up, Howie?
Well, that's an if question. I'm still working on that. But I started out life in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I left there when I was 18, and I've only been back to visit family, but that's where I was formulated.
Nice. And now you were studying to be a rabbi at one point, correct?
Well, I had thoughts of how to, in the 60s, I was part of the group that pretty much dropped out. So it got to the point as the 60s, because as the war on poverty, which was the early 60s and such a hopeful time, Kennedy, and it just all got very dark with his assassination. And then LBJ was a great president until he got messed up in Vietnam, and that just destroyed his presidency and divided this country horribly. And I was all in that stuff. And Nixon got elected in 68, and everybody who had dropped out started having to figure out how to drop back in. And that's where thoughts were, what do I want to do? That since the revolution appears to be over and the wrong side won, what do we do with our lives? And that's when I was thinking this, that, and the other thing. And I liked history. I liked studying history. So I applied to the Episcopal Theological Seminary at Harvard. A friend of mine had gone there and said, that's a great place to study history. I am not Episcopal. I was raised Orthodox Jewish, but that didn't much matter to me. It was a place to study history. And the Hebrew Union Seminary in Cincinnati was another such place that had a great reputation as a place to study history. So I applied to both of those places. At the time I did that, I was breaking concrete for $5 an hour with a sledgehammer. And I didn't want to keep doing that. That was really pretty tough work. But it helped me get in an amazing shape. And it also gave me a great suntan. I was working in August in Walnut Creek, a very hot place. So I was brown and beautiful. The phone rang one day for my wife. I was already married, and we had been on some acting list from some classes we had taken in theater. And the call came for her, and the caller said, how would you like to be in a movie about a romp through a hospital? And my wife said, is this a porno film?
Right.
And the guy must have been new at his job, because he went, yeah. And she said, well, I'm not interested, but I think my husband might be. And she handed me the phone. And I was interested, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. And he was kind of stuck. He was just, I think, embarrassed that he called, and he gave me the information about the auditions. Now, they weren't looking for guys. They're never looking for guys. Guys are coming out of the woodwork.
Exactly.
Especially in those days. And but he gave me the information, and I wanted to do it. And why did I want to do it? Well, we married in an era of free love. We had an open marriage. And I had it in my mind. There are a lot of things when you first get married. Are you married now?
I am not, no.
Okay, well, you're mating. You're with a guy.
Someday.
There's stuff you share in the beginning. And then as you go into the relationship, you dig a little deeper and you start revealing a little more. So marriage is the same way. It depends on whatever you do first. So I was in a place in my head where my own private sexual fantasies, I mean, you marry for true love. You don't marry for dirty fantasies. I don't think. But everybody's different. So I had true love, and I no doubt about that. And we can talk about that if you like, because that's wonderful.
Oh, I know. That's one of the reasons I really honestly love this book, is because this book isn't just about the golden age of porn. This is also a love story between you and Carly. And yeah, it really is just fascinating. I love reading the letters that you wrote back and forth to each other, and the poetry, and her afterword in the book, and everything. It's just such an amazing thing, because I know for me personally, I am horrendously jealous, so I literally could not watch my significant other with another woman.
I am too. I was, you know, I didn't say I was good at being in open marriage. I just was doing it. I mean, God, that was hard. Oh man. Anyway, there I am, and in my secret fantasies, I wanted to be with a dirty girl. When I was coming of age, I never went with a prostitute. I never went with some of the fast girls in high school. I wanted to be in love, and I want true love and true love, true love. Now I was at the place I had true love. I wanted some dirty shit, stuff that I wouldn't ask my wife to do. I'd be embarrassed and ashamed, but you know, things that we're talking about, crotchless panties and nippleless bras and all the best drugs and all the best oils and not an I love you in sight, because I had all the love I needed. I just wanted some dirty sex. And I thought, well, an X-rated movie place might be the place to meet people like that. Oh. I didn't want to be in a movie at all. That was not my interest. My interest was in meeting some X-rated women.
You just wanted to meet like fellow sluts.
Yes. So I get the information of the audition, and my wife gives me her blessing. There's a wonderful picture she took of me. She dressed me up to go to the audition and took a picture of me in the yard. I look like a kid going off to his first day of high school. Mm-hmm. So I go to the audition, and it's at a hotel in San Francisco. And there's a lot of people there. And I see a woman I'm kind of interested in. Okay. And they asked me to read for the part. And I read for the part when they call me into the bedroom from this hotel suite. And I'm in the bedroom. And while I'm in the bedroom, he calls in one of the women, says, would you mind reading some lines with him? So she comes in. And then he says to her, oh, by the way, do we have a picture of you? I want a picture of you for the producers to look at. So she says, no, we didn't shoot him yet. She said, well, he said, do you mind taking off your clothes? So, it's a bonus. Now they don't send me out. She gets naked, and she really is blonde. And, you know, and then he has her bend over and separate her butt cheeks. And he says, I'm looking for hemorrhoids, because they show up like baseballs in a movie. So, there's no hemorrhoids. And then she's shooting and she's pinching her nipples and making them hard for the shot. And this is an experienced woman. She knows some. I know nothing about this. You know, it's all brand new to me. But I think that's impressive that she knows to do that. And she poses. Okay, so that's who I want to be with. And then he reads me for the part, and then he dismisses me. He dismisses all the men that were in the room. So, okay. So I go out in the hallway, and I'm in the hall now to hotel, and I'm thinking, I know what I'll do. I'll just go over here, and when she comes out to go to the elevator, I'll walk up to the elevator too, like I just got here.
Convenient.
And so, okay, we both get in the elevator. And my fantasy was to fuck the girl in the elevator.
Oh.
I don't know where that came from, but that was my fantasy. All right, we get in the elevator. It's just me and her. And we're on the second floor. There's only one floor to go. I don't think I'm going to figure out how to fuck her in the elevator between two and one. So
that's magic.
I blurt out to her, do you want to go somewhere and play with me?
Oh,
and she said, I knew you were going to ask. And I said, well, I'm asking. And she said, okay, sure. I said, you need a ride? I have a car. And they said, no, I have my own car. So, well, follow me in your car. And we go to her apartment. And we get to her apartment. And she starts talking. She's talking. Okay. Enlightenment comes to Howie. There are no X-rated women. There's just costumes and play acting.
That's funny.
And there's nothing going on between us. There's no passion. I mean, it's really not there. And I have my camera with me, and she decides she'll pose for a few pictures for me. And okay, she poses. And long about 6 o'clock, we started around 4:30. The alarm is going off in my wedding room. It's time to go home.
It's time to go home.
So I go home, an older and wiser man. The problem was, 2 days later, they call me up and offer me a part in the movie.
And this is Candy Stripe Nurses?
Yeah, Candy Stripers. So, okay, do I want to do this? Well, there's a lot of questions and answers, and they're all the obvious ones. You know, what are my mom and dad going to say? And my wife was being, she did, she was, you want to do it, do it, you know, and she mm-hmm. didn't care. I mean, she cared, but she, you know, we called our marriage a union, and the union has benefits for its members. Each member's got to raise their hand and say what they want. And the union tries to provide it for the member.
Nice.
So what I wanted was to do this, and that meant that she would try to do it. And the proviso was, is the union will try to provide whatever it can for the member unless they can't stand it. And then they have a right to say, this is one toke over the line. I don't want to do that. I don't want you to do that. You know, don't bring cocaine, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to say don't. And then we talk about things. So she said it was okay. So I had permission. And I decided to go ahead and do it. Now that leads to 15 other stories, but I'll let you come in and have another question.
No, I love it. I love it so much. I can't believe they have you guys they had you guys audition at a hotel. Like,
that was common. That was how it was done. They rented a hotel suite.
Then, huh?
They marched people in all day long. They took naked pictures of you there. There was no fucking at the auditions. That it was sanctioned by the people. They didn't ask you that. They did ask you if you had a track record. I had none. And you know, this was a time, there's no Viagra. There's none of that.
Right.
So, you know, guys figured that they could do it. And you didn't know till it happened whether you could or you couldn't.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, willingness to try was a big part of it.
Now, at that time period, people like Jim South and Reb Saw and all those guys didn't exist, right?
They're all in L.A.
Okay, so all those agents were doing... Okay, those were out in L.A. And now,
but there was no motion picture industry in X-rated in L.A. at that time.
Okay.
Because they were actively hunting down any X-rated activity and busting it. This was a pressure from the Hollywood Motion Picture Association, Jack Valenti. They didn't want any X-rated production in L.A. All the companies were in L.A. and they forced them to go find another place to shoot it. Then they'd bring back the footage to L.A. and do all the post-production. But that's how it happened in San Francisco. They come up here because San Francisco was kind of like a laissez-faire. If there's no harm, there's no foul. If nobody's complaining, nobody cares. So you couldn't do it on the street out front, but they weren't going to go have undercover people looking for you like L.A. did.
Right. Right.
Yep. So that's how the industry, and in San Francisco at that time, well, this is the Haight-Ashbury days. So everybody was trying to fuck, and it wasn't a big deal. It was a good place to find people. And it was such a different scene than New York.
Mm-hmm.
New York was, did you see The Deuce?
Oh, did I ever?
Okay.
Yes.
Well, then you get a sense of it was not, it was hard. It was
dark,
gritty.
Very dark and gritty and grimy.
And run by, you know, not such nice people most of the time.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
The X-rated industry here in San Francisco, it was funded by those same people, but they weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that they got to play in the movies in the Bay Area were all hippies. And it was all, you know, innocence and flowers and, ooh, let's fuck.
Yeah.
It was much more genteel, shall we say,
cool.
than what was going on in New York, which was good because I would have never lasted a day in New York. I'm not a hard guy.
That's scary over there. I know. You
know, one of the benefits I had being with Anthony Spinelli, Sam Weston, because he was a mentor as well as a director for me. He put me in a couple of movies and I became a star quickly. Mm. And so now I'm getting phone calls from people in New York saying, we want you to come and be in a movie. Because they were equal. They were both putting out a lot of movies for a while. And they weren't competing with each other. They were kind of like just different environments, different sets of people. But a lot of the New York talent came out here. And occasionally they would bring back people from here back there.
Okay.
But I'd get a call and I would always go to Sam. This guy called me, said he wants me to be in a movie. Should I do it? Mm. And Sam would say to me, yes or no. And mostly he'd say, oh, no, I wouldn't work for him. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, because when he's not making movies, he's breaking legs.
Oh, right. Because I know Sharon Mitchell has one of the best quotes, which was organized crime made really amazing porno.
That's right. Yeah. They did. And then Jamie Gillis. I mean, it's darker. It's got a lot of... we're talking about an industry. It's almost like if you think about pornographic books before there was movies. I mean, there were movies that went back to the 20s. They were making, you know, underground things and the stag films and stuff. And they would show them on 8mm projectors and things like that. But that was a small time industry compared to what it became. But there was a huge amount of pornography written. And it was written for men to jerk off to.
Yeah.
It wasn't written for women to jerk off to.
Nope.
And women were not involved as an audience, a target for production. Mm-hmm. So the quality of the sex is male fantasy, and it's men without women, men who got turned down by the cheerleaders.
Oh, dear.
And the fantasies they had, they wanted to see these women get fucked and get fucked, like then get fucked hard and no mercy and revenge fucking.
Yeah.
And that's how porn, the mainstream porn began. A lot of it was New York. Mm. And that part to me was offensive. it was not what I mean, in my fantasies, I have room for SM activity. That I'm not saying that's among consenting adults, that's fine with me.
Which is different. That's very different. Like,
yes,
like
it is.
Our audience understands the difference and the laws of consent.
Yeah. Bend over bitch was not in my main act.
Exactly.
That is not what I was looking for. So that's what was New York stuff. And and out here you had hippies. And you know, and a lot of women were perfectly willing to fuck, but were shocked at what they were being asked to be in porn films because their own arousal was ignored.
Yes.
You know, and there's one is because the men didn't, mostly that wasn't the object of the film that they were after. They wanted men to be the toys of women. It's like disposable Kleenex. You use them and throw them away. But also because just in filmmaking, when you're shooting orgasm, it takes time for men. Even if they can do it, it takes time. Mm-hmm. And women, it takes time too, except why bother? Because you can't see anything with the camera.
Right.
You know, so we'll just act it. And so you get a lot of, oh, baby. And women acting, you have teenage girls or young 20s acting orgasms. And it's the most phony, disgusting insult to human sexuality you can imagine. I always hated that.
I
remember I was fucking one girl. I won't embarrass her with her name, but we're fucking. And she starts saying, oh, it's so big. It's so big. Is she fucking me? What? Yeah. It's not big, guys.
Someone came in and stunt dicked for you.
Yeah, well, that happened to me.
I know that story. But Ron, you have to tell that story because that's
the Ron
a great
Jeremy story.
Story. Yeah, yes.
I was invited by Svetlana and David. Who?
Svetlana.
They were an odd couple. They were producers and director, and they were Europeans and. They were famous for bringing in 18-year-old girls in their first adventures. And they did 3 or 4 or 5 movies. Bad Girls was a series they did. And they had these young women. And they were attractive women. And everybody liked that was their thing. That was their hook. So somehow I get in line to make a movie for them, and they want to shoot in LA. Nobody's shooting in LA. They didn't want to spend the money to come to the Bay Area. They were going to do it underground. They were going to cheat it and steal it all. Okay. I wasn't crazy about that, but I made the movie. And in the movie, I'm working with this unbelievably beautiful, tall, leggy woman, the kind of woman that would never have anything to do with me unless it was in a porn film. So, you know, there I am. And I get a turn with her. And it's a great sex scene. I get to do the whole scene in the British accent, which I liked a lot because I was good at it. And it was fun to play that part. So I'm playing that part. And now I have to get out of it. Okay. At the end of the sex scene, it's time for the pop shot. Svetlana says to me, "Here's what we're going to do." She was Hungarian. She said, "We're going to take a piece of glass.
Oh.
We're going to put it in front of the camera. Oh. And when you come in the glass. And everyone in the audience will see the cum coming right at them."
Oh, isn't that great? No.
That was I said. That's not the worst idea I've ever heard.
That is the worst idea.
I'm not going to do that. And this voice in the background goes, "I'll do it." That was Ron Jeremy, who was just beginning in the industry. And this was his, I think, his first trip to L.A. Mm. So here's my dick hard. And here's Ron Jeremy's dick hard. And if you see the movie, you'll see me fucking away and away. And all of a sudden, they go in for close-ups. And there's my dick all of a sudden became a foot long. And then,
oh, my God.
And that's what the scene is. So that's how I met Ron. And that's what they did in Bad Girls 1.
Oh yeah, that's the one where is that the one where Ron plays like a he almost looks like a Boy Scout instructor?
I think that's the next Bad Girls. I don't think that's one.
Oh Lord.
But I don't know. They did a series of four. I was in 1 and 4.
Hard to keep up. So when did you end up doing Playgirl? And I like the fact that a lot of the things you talk about in the book is you talk about growing up being chubby and
fat. And I had the largest breasts in the sixth grade,
and how that kind of like when you got the chance to be in Playgirl, what a huge deal that was to you. Can you talk
there is a god there is a god
that? Yeah, I would love to hear about that.
Well, I was fat from the age of about 7 to 17, and that was my childhood, and that was embarrassing, painful. Mm-hmm. Couldn't do anything about it. Tried, nothing mm-hmm. worked. And it became part of my personality. You're always the sidekick, never the leading man.
Right.
Girls always want to be your friend. Nobody wants to be your girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And for some, I'm just desperately romantic. That was the heart they gave me to play the game. So it was tough. It was tough. At the age of 17, I had started, I found a girl whose father actually was quite fat. So it didn't freak her out that I was overweight. And we started petting a little bit. And wow, that was great. Welcome to the world. I decided my junior year of high school, I also had been a very mediocre student up to that point. My brother, on the other hand, I have an older brother, 6 years older than me, never got a B in his life. All A's, all the time, everything. He was my hero. Mm-hmm. And he was on his way to Harvard Medical School. Wow. And whatever he made a right, I made a left. He was math and science. I went, no. I went history and English. But my grades weren't any, they were average. And I got to the 10th grade and I realized I went to a very heavily promoted academic school. And I kept testing well, IQ-wise, so they put me in advanced classes. But I wasn't going to worry about school. I was going to play for the Pirates. I was going to play for the Steelers. I wasn't that good.
You were going to be a baseball player?
Yeah, I was going to be a catcher. I could catch because fat kids were the catchers. So I learned how to be a good catcher. Anyway, I decided, okay. The other thing was everybody in my neighborhood, we were all going to go to college. That's how we were raised. And the question was, where are you going to go to college? That was like a big status symbol. where you could get in. And my grades were like C average, C, B average, which qualified me for a mediocre college, which meant probably staying home and going to the University of Pittsburgh, which has since become a much better school. Then it was considered very mediocre. And I didn't want to stay home. I wanted to get to go away to college because that was a successful person at that stage of life. And so I realized I had to have better grades. And at the same time that hit me, I had the urge to try to really lose this weight because I got tired of being a fat kid. So I'm in middle, it's my junior year of high school. I asked my parents if I could stay home from school for January for a while. I wanted to do two things, study for college boards because my board scores were average. I needed to get them to be good. I wanted to start working out seriously. And they said, okay, it's okay with the school. And I didn't even tell the school. I just did it. I did a minimal amount of things. So I was sick and I did that bullshitted it. From January to March, I did nothing but read 30 Days to a More Powerful Vocabulary. Oh. Weltschmerz, Rococo, I remember all the words, and worked out every day. I was running and lifting weights. And by March of my junior year of high school, I had raised my board scores 150 points in English and 100 points in math. I was now like high 600s instead of low 500s.
Wow.
Which was, I wanted a 700, but I had a 695. Good enough.
Good enough. Exactly.
And I lost 50 pounds.
Oh.
50 fucking pounds. When I went back to school, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. I was the new kid.
Right.
And the girls are looking at me now. Whoa. Thank you, Jesus. You know? So that began a whole other. That spring we had election for a class president for the next year, our senior year. I got elected class president.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like, this kid did a miracle. He must be cool. So that made me a star. I went from being Quasimodo to Robert Redford like overnight.
Makes sense.
And my parents were just tickled at all the girls who were calling on the phone. And I was juggling, you know, trying to have them all. There's a whole lot of psychology we can talk about with my wife once said to me about women, the need for lots of women. She said, you're like a guy that goes to an all you can eat restaurant and is busy stuffing rolls in his pocket for later.
For later. Yeah.
While you're eating now.
Right.
There was a lot of truth in that in terms of not the healthiest. It was revenge. You know, all those years of no, it was like, what do you think about? How about me now? The centerfold was the same thing. That's where the question came from. Really, the centerfold was like that. And the centerfold came from, I was in a hot tub in Berkeley, naked place, with a friend of our family, friend of my wife, who was a fellow therapist at the clinic where she worked. And the therapist, she said to me, wow, you're in really good shape. Why don't you do Playgirl? She wrote the advice column for Playgirl.
Nice. Oh.
So she, and I said, for me, that sounded like, wow, yeah, sure. What do we do? She said, well, let's take some pictures. I'll send them down to whoever the woman was in charge of Centerfold. And turned out she wore very thick glasses. And so she took like six rolls of film of me. And I think two pictures came out in focus.
But oh.
They were good enough. The thing that was interesting to me that I found out afterwards was, I did a lot of being naked in the backyard here, in the commune. We were, there's a lot of nudity.
And we have the pictures to prove it.
Yeah. And I had no tan lines. Mm. So all the guys that were applying for Playgirl, they were all real brown with white tushies. And I was brown all over. Something different.
So
that caught the part. They picked me for the centerfold. And great. So I go down to L.A., and I shoot the centerfold. Now, I had already done 3, 4, 5 X-rated movies. And I was terrible at it. Terrible. Oh, I was so scared. How do you get a hard-on? How do you keep a hard-on? Masturbation is how you do it. But In my life, masturbation was something that always happened behind a locked door.
Oh.
If you had told me being in a movie was like masturbating in front of people, I wouldn't have been within 100 miles of that.
You wouldn't have done that, no.
I can't think of anything more humiliating than to being caught masturbating. And here you have to stand there and play with yourself. Oh, my God. Because you don't know, especially when you're nobody. When you're nobody and a guy in porn, you're lucky if you get a hello from the woman you're going to be fucking in 10 minutes. A lot of them just take off their pants and stick their ass up. And this was up to you.
Oh, Lord.
You get there, they don't care. And they're not going to do anything about it. And, you know, sometimes the producers would have to say, look, if you want to get paid, you got to help him get up. And then you'd get a better attitude because they wanted the money. The old saw that men got into the business for the sex and women got into it for the money was pretty much true.
Okay. During that time period, that was the rule.
I learned that it was really hit or miss for me, whether I'd be able to come or not. The first scene I did was a marathon. They had me come in for like what they thought would be half a day, shoot the morning. And then I turned it into an all-day lollipop where 4 or 5 hours were spent with everybody laying around the set sleeping while they were waiting for me to get a hard on.
Oh, my God.
Some people may be still waiting for that.
Now, you worked with my all-time 100% favorite adult performer, which is Marilyn Chambers.
Oh, and yes, I did. Boy, was I proud to be there that day.
In one of my absolute favorite adult films, which is Insatiable. I've seen that movie like 17 times. I love it. Everything that I know about seduction and talking dirty and all of that stuff, I learned from Marilyn Chambers from watching that movie. So
you had a good teacher.
I did, indeed. Can you tell me what it was like working with her, how you fell into that particular job and all that?
How did I get that job? I don't even remember. And I think by then I was pretty well established. I was a known entity. And I had a call from Stu Siegel, who was the producer of the film. And they had the best logo in the business. It was Miracle Films.
Did.
And their logo was, if it's a good film,
it's a miracle.
It's a miracle, which is true on so many levels. It was just great. So he invites me to be in the movie. There's no audition or anything. And I jump at it. And so now I'm in the movie and I'm in the best shape of my life. Mm. I'm gorgeous. And I meet Marilyn. I drive, it's in Sacramento shooting at the Delta. And I meet her. She's in the makeup chair when I see her. And she starts, I have my camera and we're doing hello. And it's, and then I said, do you mind if I take a couple pictures? She says, no, go ahead. And she starts. And now I have pictures of her doing that, which was fun, because she's Marilyn Chambers being, and she's the thing about her at that stage was hard to deal with. I mean, I came across her in the makeup room and we got to hello and get and be nice to each other, and that worked. That was fine. That's all I needed. Mm-hmm. But she was with Chuck Traynor at the time.
Yeah.
So when he had her on a very short leash. Especially around the other men and male performers specifically. Mm-hmm. So she wouldn't, she wasn't available for any play or rehearsal anything.
Rehearsal.
So you saw her, you usually saw her in makeup and then on the set and then she was gone. And that's how it went. I wasn't crazy about the scene, the way it's written, because there's a lot of bad jokes. A double entendre.
There's a lot of double entendres in that scene.
Yeah, and that's not my kind of humor. It makes me feel like stupid. But that's what they were selling. She was cool, and she was the one she was the experienced one, and I was the kid, all excited. And that was really, the scene we were playing was exactly what was going on. So it was not difficult to play. And when we were shooting the scene, she's eventually sucking me, and I'm hard. And they get as much footage as they want of that. And then they're going, okay, now come. So I said to them, well, in real life and in cinematic life, it takes me forever to come from a blowjob. That's just not a quickie thing with me. It's not going to be quick.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody like Marilyn, whose time is money, on the set especially, it would have taken the rest of her youth before I was going to come. And I knew that. They didn't know that. But I had discovered that about me in the four or five movies I'd already made. Because I began, when I started failing in front of the camera, there's no lower place on earth that I could imagine. Because when you're sitting there and you can't get hard, well, you're not a man.
Right.
And you're not a woman. What are you? You know, you're just dead Dick Jones. And God, that. And then there's people looking at you, and some people are glad you failed. Other people don't care. And the producers are pulling their hair out because they're going to have to spend more money to get somebody to get a boner and get come.
Right.
So it's not a pleasant ride. And I began studying my infirmity. Mm. I took notes like I did in baseball. how do you learn how to hit a fastball? Well, what are the factors? Is the pitcher left-handed or right-handed? Can I hit a curveball or fastball? All the different factors involved. So with sex, are they asking me to fuck standing or sitting? I don't do well with standing up and having sex. Mm. When the pressure's on, if you have your normal arousal, figure the pressure you're working under, just cut your normal arousal in half. So you got half of what you normally have in your private life working for you there. In the meantime, you've got lighting guys and makeup people putting sponges up your ass, and it's all this activity. If you're not there for your pleasure, mm-hmm. they're making movies, and you got to adjust your sex thing to their sex thing. Hmm. And I was doing it like 100%, trying to please everybody. Eventually, I had a talk with John Seaman, and that was his real name.
Yes. I know that that's his real name, but it's so funny because it's like insert joke here, but it's his real name.
So John was a major player in the 70s. He's a guy who looks like a banker, and you wouldn't think of him as a sexual stud at all, but he was. John could get it up during an earthquake and did. and he was I would look around for men I could talk to, but how do you do this? And most of the other actors, they don't want to help you. You're right. The fucking competition.
You're the competition.
You died good, more for me. But John was so secure in who he was in the business that he said to me, look, Howie, you've got to stop trying to please everybody when it's time to do a sex scene. You've got to please yourself at that point in time. Oh. So if somebody is giving you a hard time on this, so many things he told me. There was this one still photographer who I remember I was supposed to be in this movie, The Sensuous Detective. And I was supposed to play a guy in a massage parlor having sex with a masseuse. So I go looking for the woman that I'm supposed to be working with that morning. And I won't say her name because there's no point. And I can't find her anywhere on the set. I'm trying to get a hello because I do better when I get a hello than when I just meet on the set for the first time. And I try to make friends. I'm good at fucking my friends. I'm not good at fucking people who don't want to talk to me. And when you're nobody, that's a lot of that. So I finally find her in a corner of the studio being fingered by the still photographer.
Oh, dear.
Exactly. So I make myself scarce. And this particular skill photographer, he was always giving me grief because I would. Mm-hmm. He was on some movies that I couldn't get up. So he would tease the shit out of me and make fun of me.
Oh.
Now, that's not the guy you want to see on the set.
Nope.
Let alone when he's taking the woman you're going to work with and he's making out with him.
Oh, my God.
So John would say to me, like, if there's somebody on the set like that, you tell the director. Because if you don't make it right for yourself, the director doesn't have any movie. And he knows that. So you have power at that point in time. You can have those people removed from the set if they're not absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. And that'll help you. Yeah, that's one less thing you have to worry about. And he taught me lots of things like that.
Wow.
That I had to exercise power and get what I needed to be able to function. And it started helping me. It actually helped me. So I learned how to do those things. I can't remember what question you asked. Oh, Insatiable. So it got to the point in Insatiable where they needed a cum shot. She was sucking me for like a half an hour.
Scene, actually.
it's not continuous because you shoot for five, and especially when you have film magazines, there's only like 3, 4, 5 minutes in a magazine, then you cut and you reload. And during that time,
exactly.
And then you're gonna get back to the Well, I went through this in the first 7 to 10 movies many times until I realized, okay, you only have so many of these in you
mm-hmm.
until your dick says, hey, Howie, what We're the done. Fuck?
Yeah.
you know, are we going to do this or not? Because then my dick would just take the car keys and go home and leave me there. And I would just be like, oh, my God, here we go. What am I doing now? And I just try to get through it. So I knew all that about me already by the time Insatiable came along. And they wanted me to come from a blowjob. And I said, look, it's best if I just get myself to the edge of coming, because I know how to do that better than she does. And I'll save her makeup one day, and I'll save time. And then I'll just cue her when I'm ready to pop. And that's what we did. And I saved them maybe an hour, maybe two, maybe the whole scene. Because like I said, I failed a lot trying to go by what, do everything that they wanted me to do instead of doing what I needed to do. And that's where, you know, there I am masturbating in front of the 40 people and Marilyn Chambers.
And Marilyn Chambers.
And going, oh, you know, it, the irony of the porn star. Right. And what people think you're like, and what your life is like, and what being in the movies is like, and here's me jerking off, you know, and it's just, do I tell my friends because I fucking Marilyn Chambers? Well, I didn't exactly fuck Marilyn Chambers.
Yeah, right.
But that, luckily for me, we did some more scenes together later in my career, and by then I was a pro. So, in fact, one of the sweetest things I found out about Marilyn, and I didn't know this, the second movie, in the third movie I made with her. We enjoyed each other's company, and Chuck Traynor wasn't around anymore.
So
that was fun because she came in with one of us instead of being the star in the trailer. Mm-hmm. So that was fun and good. So I was reading an interview with her after she had retired, and somebody had asked her, who's your favorite person to work with?
And she said, you.
She said me.
And that's the first time I ever heard your name. Because
oh, man, I was so flattered. Yeah. I wished she had told me that while she was alive, you know, because Lord knows I was just so honored to be with her. And she was a pro and she was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was like, okay, just do your job and get out of her way. Because Chuck Traynor wasn't, because in the second movie, I was hoping, I played a character, a disc jockey. It was up and coming.
Oh, up and coming. Oh, yeah. where she was like the country music star. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So in the plot line, she gives me half a blowjob because I'm the big shot. I'm the big shot DJ.
Right.
And she gives me half a blowjob. And then she says to me, when my song's number one, I'll come back and finish the blowjob. Yeah. So that's the plot thing. But in real life, that's exactly what happened because I had half a blowjob and I was hoping that we could finish it off stage. Mm-hmm, but no, they had the next scene ready to go and then she was gone.
Now, that movie and Insatiable both featured John Holmes. Like he just kind of shows up because...
Was he in Insatiable?
He's in Insatiable at the very end. He's the final sex.
Yeah, the climax.
So to speak. Did you ever get to actually work with him? Like actually, because I know you were, you know, very close with John Leslie and those guys, but I didn't know if John Holmes was part of that, you know, hangout crew or not. No,
John Holmes was in a category by himself. he was the whole movie. When he was in the movie, he didn't, for instance, when I was a star, the top pay you were going to get was $1,000 a day. Mm-hmm. And Jamie Gillis got that. John Leslie got that. I got that. Probably Eric Edwards got that. Paul Thomas got it when he cared. He didn't. Because he once asked me, how much money did you make this year?
Oh, PT.
And I told him how much. And he told me about a figure that was double that. And I said, well, if a person wouldn't pay me my rate at that point, when I was at the top of my career, which was $1,000 a day, I didn't take the job because I learned that if you take a lesser amount, you'll never get that amount.
Right.
They'll just beat you up until you, you know. Well, so when I would say no and turn down those jobs, the next time they call me up, they knew they had to pay me that or don't call me. And then I'd get paid. So that worked for me. It also worked for me because, again, this is the part where one question leads to 20 answers. I would be in a lot of movies like John Leslie, where I'd have one sex scene and he'd have four. And that was about right for me because I only did about two movies in my life where I was the star and had the four or five sex scenes, and those beat the shit out of me. Because that's like every day you have a whole sex scene, and a whole sex scene is like 3 hours of being hard. And that's no chemical help.
Right.
So I couldn't, I did, those movies wore me out. So I didn't mind the relationship I had where I would be a co-star and do the one and get, end up a star billing as the actor with the co-star thing with John.
I've heard so many things about him being basically a male diva and being not really anyone's friend on the set or anything.
Well, so. Diva, that would be strictly in the language of what movie prestige is about. Mm. With John, drug addiction played a huge part.
Okay. Okay.
Because when he was, you know, I had seen him, let's go back to my first movie with him, Pizza Girls. He's the star.
Yeah,
he's Pizza the star Girls. Of the movie.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the third movie. So I get a call. I'm supposed to be on the set at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I get a call like at 10 o'clock in the morning. Can you come early and bring your Volkswagen bus? I had a VW and they knew that. So we set fire to the Shakey's Pizza Parlor, which was our set.
Oh.
And we had to get out of there right away. So please come and help us. And I was young and new, so I did.
Did they do that on purpose?
No, it was an accident.
Oh, okay.
So I get to the set, and there's John Holmes. I'd never seen him before in person. And he's walking around schlepping equipment like a lowly grip.
Oh,
well, that's impressive.
That's nice.
You know, and I, before I know it, I'm walking around carrying shit like a lowly grip. And I'm thinking, I hope somebody's taking the time to be impressed by me. Okay, so we get on the set, and during the course of the next 6 days we're on that set, I see him going out of his way to teach somebody some aspect of filmmaking, because he's a serious veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And I also see him reduce a nobody actress to tears, apparently just because he felt like it.
Ooh.
And so he was nice to me, but I wasn't getting in his way.
Right. Okay.
He was the star on the set. It all revolved around him, except for on that particular set. Let me be a little gentle about this. There was the guy who was the producer,
mm-hmm.
and he was the guy that looked like right out of Central Casting. He was a big fat guy with a shaved head at a time that wasn't stylish. And the prettiest girl on the set was always sitting in his lap, and she wasn't even in the movie. But she was gorgeous, and he was the power. He's the owner, the money, and you know, I leave out a lot of other words that don't need to be said. And when he barked, everybody jumped, including John Holmes.
Mm, okay.
But other than that, it was John Holmes was the power.
Interesting.
Okay. So now all the shit happens to John Holmes with the Wonderland murders and this and that. About 6 months later, I get a call from the producer, Stu Siegel, who says, we need to do some more footage for that movie. I need you to be in another sex scene. Stu says to me, he wants me to be in a scene with me and John Holmes in Maryland.
Oh, dear.
And I, in my life, I'd been out of the business for 6 months. We just had a baby.
Okay.
And I was thinking I'm done with this business because it just seemed my wife was... It had gone from something that she thought was cute that her husband did to something that she wished he was done doing.
Mm.
And I'm going, are you kidding? Because now I'm a star. I'm getting paid $1,000. I don't want to quit. I sat through shit to get to this level, and you're telling me give it up? Fuck no. I want to eat some of these. I want to do this. So we were at odds and working it out. Anyway, Stu says, I want you to have a sex scene with Marilyn Chambers and John. And I said, are you crazy? Those are the two most powerful people in the industry. And you think I'm going to be able to function in the...
No.
You know, John's fucking her, and then I'm going to stick it in, and she's going to say, is it in?
Oh, Lord.
Because there's, you know, me and John, you know, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned it down, and he needed me in that scene. I said, I'll have no power. He said, well, you got some power yourself. And I said, boy, if I ever knew somebody was desperate to get me in this movie, that was it.
So, your dick is just as good as John's.
Yeah, right. So he keeps raising the money. And so now he's telling me, I'll give you, instead of 1,000, he goes, I'll give you 1,100. And I kept saying no. He said, no. 1,200. And then I look at my wife and she goes,
okay.
The boss said, okay. So, okay, now I'm getting this extra money. But I really didn't want to do that. And I kept saying, see if you can figure out a way that I don't have to work with John in Maryland. And so he called me back the next day. He's added Herschel Savage.
Ah, that's it. Yes, I remember this.
And Lily Marlene to the scene. So, okay. Now there's other bodies on the set. It's just not me with the power people. And I can handle that. Since I had been with Lily Marlene. Mm-hmm. Lily Marlene, do you know her work?
No, actually. That's the first time I've heard that name.
Well, you should know her. She is one of the unsung heroes of adult films. Okay. She was not gorgeous, but pretty. And she was absolutely an astonishing fuck. She just liked to fuck. And she liked to do anal.
Oh, that's interesting.
That was such a premium. Because the women would do that, but they'd be charging an extra $5,000 or whatever they could get. I've met very few women in my life who actually like that. And she did. That was her preferred way.
Wow.
So she's in the movie. And the day we shot that film, well, here's how fate would go. John Holmes had been in San Quentin for what they were calling protective custody for about 9 months. And he wasn't being charged with a crime. I think they were just trying to keep him alive because the bad guys were not happy with what he had done.
Yeah. Eddie Nash was basically going to send people after him. And
I don't know. And I don't want to know. So anyway, but that was the story. And so he's going to be the day we're going to shoot this film. He's getting out. So he comes straight from San Quentin to the set.
Mm.
And that makes for a very strange day.
I'll bet.
Because he and I were hello friendly, but we weren't, bosom buddies talking about the secrets. And the day he shows up on the set, he came in the afternoon. In the morning, my sex scene turned out to be a double header with Lily Marlene and Marilyn. And they wanted a blowjob. Well, a blowjob with two women was about the best I could hope for.
Absolutely.
Because I would wear out one. And then when I did, the other one would take over.
Nice.
And they could keep passing my lollipop back and forth till I would come. And that's what happened. And it was an easy day for me. I'm getting all this extra money. In the afternoon, John Holmes shows up. And I remember we're shooting in Marin in March. It's cold. And everybody's kind of, you're naked. And if you're not in the shot doing the sex scene, we were in the background of each other's shot. So you have to be on the set and you have to be naked. And John was naked and he just stayed naked all day. And everybody else would run for a blanket after it and he would just stay naked.
Wow. And
Truman remarked, that's what being in San Quentin will do for you. So anyway, I'm done with my scene. And after my scene, the set, which I thought was amazing coincidence, is the home of a Marin County proctologist.
Oh.
Okay, that's irony. So there's a balcony over a living room. And on the balcony is where we had the donuts and the snack food for the crew and the cast. So I'm up on the balcony. And I'm done with my scene. I couldn't eat before a sex scene because you want to be slender and all that. So now I can eat whatever I want. And I'm eating donuts. And all of a sudden I hear this scream. I mean, screams. And what's that? And I know it's Marilyn. And what's going on? And I look out over the balcony and John Holmes is fucking Marilyn Chambers in the ass.
Yep. Because he does it in Insatiable and it's shocking.
Yes, it is. And the noise coming out of Maryland was incredible. And I'm watching that. And I had just come. And all of a sudden, I'm getting hard again. That didn't happen to me very often in the movies. I wasn't in the scene, but I was sitting over the balcony eating my donut, eating a boner. It was just her face I think I wrote it this way. You see a baby when the baby's crying. It's just, there's no censorship. There's no, it's just, you know, real. It's just free. It's raw. Raw is the word. And Marilyn was like that. Only she was screaming, but she wasn't screaming stop.
Right.
She looked ecstatic. And I'm watching the scene and I get hard again and I'm thinking, wow, this is the greatest sex scene I've ever seen. And it continues until it's done. And afterwards, I remember signing my model, just getting paid and going home. And for the next 3 months, I'm telling people, this was the best sex scene ever filmed. You've got to see this scene. Nice. So the movie comes out and, oh my God, they have the camera pretty much locked down on her asshole in the dick. All you see is asshole dick. Asshole dick. Asshole dick. There's no humanity in it.
It all just looks like open heart surgery.
Yeah. Her face was the show.
Oh my God.
Her face. God damn. With the camera. Tilt the camera. Never did it. You know, I felt so disappointed because I told so many people to go watch this and, you know, well, you fucked her in the ass. Yeah. Okay.
No,
they're wasted.
You mentioned Sam Weston, i.e. Anthony Spinelli. Can you tell me how you started working with him and how that became, and you know, he became your mentor, but like how you started with, like, you know, Talk Dirty to Me and.
I just posted this story on Facebook. I could read it. Well, no, I'll tell you the story. I know it. Maybe 10, 15 movies in, scenes in, some which were loops. I had gotten a name for myself. So everybody that saw me work said, you know, you got to meet Sam Weston. He's the best director in the business. He makes the best movies. He hires the best actors. You got to meet him. So, okay. So I call him up one day and say, I've been recommended that I meet you and I'd like to meet you. So he's in San Francisco. He's based in LA. He was in San Francisco casting a movie called Easy. And I was working at that time in a movie called Tangerine, which is another whole story I won't go into unless you want it later. So I only worked in the morning and he said, come by the hotel Travel Lodge on Eddy Street in San Francisco. So I come and meet him and we start talking and he's telling me about Easy. And okay. And he has me read for a part. And we read the scene together. My character is called Boy, and he plays the woman in the scene. And we read the scene. Okay, after that, well, he starts telling me about my character and about her character. And then we read the scene again. Now, this is already more than it's ever happened to me at an X-rated audition, ever. Usually they just do a naked Polaroid, have me read a scene once, cold read, if there is any, with not a word about anything else. But here it's already. Now, after that, he starts going into how this scene fits into the whole movie and the character arc of the players and
Wow.
And then we read it a third time. And then we read it a fourth time. And I wrote, Sam Weston is having fun. He's having his way with me. This is what he does. He's a director. And he said to me for the first time, a phrase I was to hear a lot in the next 10 years, you're the paint. I'm the painter.
Nice.
So when you work for me, you do it my way.
Okay.
No problem. So he offers me a part in the movie and pays me. I was my third or fourth movie. I don't know. The going rate for feature films was $200 a day for newcomers. And that's what I agreed to work for. And then he offered to buy me dinner. So, okay, we go down to the coffee shop and I order five sunny side up eggs, two orders of sausage, one order of bacon, a double order of hash browns, and a double order of whole wheat toast, which for me was dinner. In those days, I ate one meal a day and it was a big meal.
Nice.
So I ordered all that food. Sam just got so happy. I was a complete pig. He loved it. He put his arm around me.
Aww. And
he smiled a million-dollar smile. And he and I became friends for life.
Wow.
And beyond.
That's so sweet.
in that moment.
This is so sweet. Now, I know that at one point you decided that you were no longer going to perform in adult films because a new thing had come up and it was AIDS.
Right.
And you had this amazing and profound conversation with Carly. And where can you want to tell us a little bit about that? That's one of my favorite stories.
AIDS happened on November the 10th. Oh my God. 1984. Headlines, San Francisco Chronicle. AIDS had crossed over into the heterosexual community. First indication that that had happened. Story, cover story, was that two prostitutes had infected two Johns with AIDS, women to male transport. After 2 years of being headlines as a gay disease, this was the first time it was headlined as a, everybody is vulnerable. And it caused major stir all throughout the Bay Area and all throughout people who were involved with free love or multiple partners. And there was a friend named Michael Rossman, who was one of the leaders of the free speech movement at Cal in the 60s, became a big brother to me. He came over, he's a mathematician and a poet and a lot of other things. He came over to my house that afternoon and said, you got to get out of this business. You're vulnerable here. The article identified three types of people as being vulnerable. One were men that had multiple partners. Two were men that used intravenous drugs. And three were Haitians. Well, the X-rated industry was two of those three. There were people doing needle drugs. Not everybody, not by any means, but there were people in there. And they were, certainly had multiple partners. So I was not, I was a candidate for the disease as opposed to somebody who's being monogamous. And my wife, as I said earlier, had already turned the corner. By 1984, we had two kids now. And she was already done with me not being home with the kids and her all the time. Instead of now I'm traveling in places because I'm a star in 1984. So I'm getting more work, not less, and I'm getting more money. I'm getting to write my own scripts, my own scenes. I'm getting to put the kind of quality in the sex I want to put in it instead of being ashamed of it. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. So I had had three movies lined up for December. And she said, don't do them. And I said, I'm going to do them. And we'll talk when I get home. So I went ahead and did the movies. I found out in November, this was December. I come back home at the end of December or middle, whenever the movies were done. And I reached for her that night to go to fuck in bed. Oddly enough, my parents were actually staying with us then. And they knew about my career by then. So it was weird. And we go to bed and we start kissing. And she stops and says to me, do you think we should? And I said, in my best John Nuzzo imitation, John Leslie imitation, what? And she said, quote, verbatim, don't you think it would be prudent if one of us remained alive to raise the kids?
It still gives me chills. It just to hear it, my is like, oh, I get teary eyed when I hear that story. I've heard it so many times.
I get teary eyed too. So that was like a, that was it. That was like, that was it. That was it. In the morning, I woke up. Not only was I monogamous, but I, or not only was I retired, but I was now monogamous, something I never, ever dreamed I'd want to be. And again, that's all, you know, from having grown up as Joe Bob Fat Boy, and now I was enjoying the revenge tour,
right,
on all the women of the world that said no to me.
So
anyway, that was my retirement, and it was. I had a dear friend that I went to high school with, who had become a quite an accomplished physician, and I called him up and said, "Look, is there any way I can still work in this industry with the AIDS threat?" And he called me back like about a week later and said, I've done some research. And the answer is no.
No.
So he reinforced what I already didn't want to know, but that I knew in my heart was true. There was a threat out there. Mm-hmm. And I became, the industry didn't want to hear from me, because it was a whole year before anybody talked about safe sex.
Now, when did you do Red Garter with Hypatia Lee?
Red Garter came, it was right after safe sex became a thing.
Okay.
And Sam wanted me in my comeback movie. I said, Sam, if I can wear a rubber, then I'm your guy. If I can't, I can't do the movie. And because they determined that wearing a latex condom will stop the virus from spreading mm-hmm. that way, assuming you do no exchange of bodily fluids. That means if somebody's sucking your dick to get you hard, you know, there's some pre-cum, there's liquid that comes out.
Right.
So, and there's also openings for saliva to come in. So that they didn't know whether that could spread the virus or not. Mm. So better safe than sorry, no exchange of bodily fluid. So we got to make the Red Garter. It's going to be condom sex. We're going to safe sex rules. And God, Hypatia. I was in a movie with her and Randy West and who else was the other? Oh, Rachel Ashley was her stage name.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to work with Hypatia really badly. And they cast her with Randy instead. Mm. And I had to work with Rhonda, Rachel, who was beautiful. But I don't know what happened. I had a failed sex scene that day. And this is when I was a star after, because I eventually learned how to do it. And then I had a run where I didn't fail at all. And then at the end, I started failing again. And this was like one of the early fails. And what happened was she had her mom on the set.
Oh, dear.
Her mom was like her wardrobe lady or her friend or her mom. And she just came with her on shoots to make sure she wasn't mistreated, I imagine, protecting her daughter.
Interesting.
All of which was admirable.
Right.
But I think it kind of got to me deeply.
Kind of a boner killer.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I just ended up because it, you know, we started the scene and I was in her and for about four or five strokes and it just turned to mush. And I think I just hit that panicky thing. And it wasn't conscious. There wasn't like a equal B, but I'm pretty sure I just felt weird with her mother there. I don't think I want to fuck anybody whose mother's in the room.
Oh dear. Is that the one where Randy West stepped in?
Well, yeah, he did. But, that wasn't that was done like in close-up
so you
wouldn't know it, unless right. you were really paying attention to our dick, because his dick is not shaped like mine. He had more
exactly.
of a curve,
very different.
Yeah, but that was a cheat shot. That was like another Ron Jeremy moment for me. So we're back to Hypatia. So now it's later in my career. I'm doing my first comeback scene in the Red Garter. I'm real worried about it being there's still no help with Viagra, any of that doesn't exist. And I'm getting to be with Hypatia, who I adore as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
I adore as one of the most beautiful women God has ever made.
Absolutely.
And I'm an actress. She's talented. So it's three for three. Here we go. But I still have all this trauma in me. I mean, I haven't been on the set for a year and got babies. That's another story for later. You know, you're sitting there and you're getting taking all this money and everybody's waiting for you and it's the job.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two more attempts at a sex scene before I finally realized this just might be a younger man's gig. I don't think I want to do that. I don't want to. It was one thing to fail when I was nobody and learning how.
Right.
It was another thing to fail when I was being paid $1,000 a day and I'm a star. And I just felt. I felt like Willie Mays when he played for the Mets when he was an old man. You know, I can't do this anymore. And I don't want to put myself through this anymore. And I don't have the right to put them, the producers and the other actors and actresses, through this anymore. I'm done. And one more PS to that, and then you can go wherever you want. I read an article during this early, well, it was later, it's maybe 5 years later. It was some research that was going on at Harvard where they talked about male sexuality. And they measured testosterone levels in men at different stages of their lives and at different situations they were in. And they noticed for men who had children and had involvement in childcare from diapering to feeding to being there, as opposed to at work all day. Right? Those men have the lowest drops of testosterone.
Oh.
And I had had three babies, bat, boom, 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 like every 2 years, and had done, that's all I was doing when I was doing a lot of childcare.
Right.
And it was like the big, oh, I felt like Curly. Oh, no, you tell me. It made more sense to me why I was having so much trouble. Because the testosterone was just, you know, disappearing. And plus, you know, you're doing 3 a.m. feedings and this and that. It just doesn't, not compatible with being young and wild and having a steady parade of females.
Yeah. It's not.
Plus, there'd been a death that I had to deal with from a woman that I had worked with that hit me pretty hard. I'd worked with Shauna Grant when she was new.
Yeah.
And got, went through all that. That was horrible. So, yeah, that was another stuff. After that, I didn't want to work with any new girls anymore.
Right.
I only wanted to work with women who knew the game and were tough enough. They'd been battle tested. They knew the routine here. And even at that, what I discovered, I can tell you, at age 74, it's easy to have free love and liberated sexuality when you're not in love. When you're in love with somebody, all that shit goes right out the door when the bleeding starts. It's just another thing entirely. At least that's how it was for me. We're all different and wired differently. Plus, you know, I think I had to hit about 50 years old before the beast that drove me to do all this fucking kind of got tired a little bit and let me let go of that particular mania. I mean, I've been monogamous now, what am I, 74, for about 20 years now. And I like it. I don't like the idea of it, but I like my marriage. I like what we've made of it. And I don't seem to have missed anything. I just missed more of it. And I felt like I didn't get to know it. So now, I'm happy where I am.
Now, post-porn and now where you're at today, have you seen the things that are out there? I mean, is it ever like, oh man, I wish I knew then what I know now, kind of like, I wish I could get back into the industry as a young man today or whatever.
Well, as a young man, sure, but I'm not a young man. So,
but do you ever look at it and just go, no, like, this is crazy?
Well, there were some movies made. I mean, I have daughters.
Right. Yeah.
And I have a son. And my son actually wrote and produced 3 X-rated movies. And he's got a very, what we would call, woke consciousness. So the women aren't the typical women you see in porn. They're average. They look like women you see every day. And they are erotic too, you know? And so it's a whole different consciousness of that stuff. It's not all cocksucker red lipstick and bleach blonde hair. That was my day. That was the thing.
Well, it's funny because there's a quote, which is, my new favorite bands are pretty much my old favorite bands. And that's how I feel about pornography, is my new favorite pornography is always my old favorite pornography. Yeah.
I get a kick out of watching some of the stuff I did. A lot of the time, because I wasn't enjoying it at the time. I was working.
Oh, that's funny.
I wasn't free to enjoy it. I had to, is this enough for this shot? Should I change positions? All the things you do when you're working. You know, I once saw a film. I was on the set working as a sound guy. I tried to do every position in the crew just to learn more about the industry. This is when I was pretty new. And I watched Blair Hamilton, I think is that his name, Blair Morris, Blair somebody, working with Bonnie Holiday. Do you know Bonnie Holiday? She's from the 70s.
The name sounds very familiar.
She was Annette Haven's wife at one point. They had a thing they called, but Bonnie Holiday was as beautiful as Annette. She was really a stone knockout beauty. And I'm watching Blair, who was one of the guys, fuck her. And I'm holding the boom or something. And Blair is, he's just fucking her for his own pleasure. And they're shooting him, but he doesn't pay any attention to them. and they're not bothering him. And he, like, he got close to coming, and he still pulls back, you know, and then he comes back again. And I'm just watching. I'm like, I'm dying to fuck this woman. I'm sitting here on the boom with a boner, and he's just fucking her, and we're all, he's having the gay, it's a wonderful time. And I didn't even dawn on me that you could do this for your own pleasure. I never had that kind of confidence as a performer that I could, you know, be that way. I mean, I was grateful for when it happened, because it did happen, where I'd be in a sex scene and it would be like, it'd have a magical moment. I had one with great actress, Samantha Fox. Samantha Fox, when we made Irresistible, she was the queen of the industry. She had won Best Actress 2 years in a row. And she and I had this lead in this major movie. And I remember when she showed up, we were 7 months pregnant with our first baby.
Wow.
So, I mean, we were really tight, my wife and I, in that moment. And this movie came along, and it was too big to turn down. So I accepted it, and my wife said, you know, we accepted it. And Samantha Fox comes to town, and I'm going to be with her for, like, we got adjoining rooms at a hotel. I got to the point where I much preferred to stay at a hotel with the cast and the crew than come commute when they were shooting in San Francisco, because it was just too much of a head fuck to come home and be integrated with my wife and then
go away. Yeah.
So I just get with them, do that, and come home when you're done. And that's where that became a modus operandi for a while. And with Samantha, when she showed up, normally with X-rated movies, if you're not working the next day, there's a lot of hanky-panky going on between everybody. So whatever you can get your hand on, the crew and the cast gets mixed, and it's all sometimes secret, sometimes not. But that's just part of movie business. The Hollywood, straight Hollywood, is the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
Samantha is, I'm so just filled with my wife and the baby, and that's all I'm talking about. And she starts telling me a lot about Bobby Astor, who was this major X-rated star in New York. They called him the Clown Prince of Porn.
Oh, yeah.
They were a couple, and they were a power couple in New York. So we were hanging out together, my wife and her and me, and we were giving her strategies for trying to get him to ask her to marry him. And that was a level of conversation. And then when we got left alone, my wife would go home and I'd be with her. The question was, well, should we fuck? Should we, you know, get used to each other? And we only had one sex scene to do in the movie. And it just became, you know what? Let's just save it. And that sex scene will be our moment. And so we treated the movie that way. And meantime, I wasn't in a hurry to get laid, because this was one of those movies where I had a starring role, which means every day I had a different sex scene with somebody else. So every day was, you know, by the end of 5 days, you start looking green. You've had enough sex for a while. So at the end, I had her at the end. And so it comes time to do our scene. This is in the book. You remember these stories. We're in bed and we're doing some dialogue. And she gets a phone call from Bobby on the set. So she gets out of the bed to take the phone call. And when she gets back in bed with me, we're about ready to do the sex part. And she tells me that New York is 3 hours ahead. So she tells me I had just won the Best Supporting Actor Award from the New York Critics people.
Oh.
And the Best Actor Award. I won both awards.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she gets into bed and tells me this. Well, my God. Don't you want to talk about foreplay? can you imagine? I'm about to fight the queen of the industry after being told I was just declared the king. I mean, you know, I wasn't no king. Jamie Gillis was a king, and John Holmes and John Leslie and Eric. But I had won both awards. So I was on the moon, and now we're going to have sex. And Eddie Brown was the director. Anyway, he put on music for our sex scene.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't do that. Well, nobody even thought to do it. But they weren't going to pay for it, because you don't pay. They'd have to. Like fame, you take a hit record, you'd have to pay residuals on that, big money to use it. So he put on Air Supply.
Oh,
You're Every Woman in the World to
Me. I swear to God, this is like fantasy.
You're with me. That's exactly what happened.
So
that's
with
exactly
you,
what happened.
I am the biggest Air Supply nut in the
world. Well, I wasn't, but this song got me. So now I'm getting in bed with Samantha. As I said, she's on the queen, and I'm my moment. I've just been in, and this is our one scene. And we, this whole scene is we've just realized that we love each other. That's that's the scene we're playing. And so I'm looking at Samantha and like, she is every woman in the world to me.
Right.
And so I just, you just ride it. You just go, you just use it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to end on that because that is the most fabulous story. It's so romantic. So to hear you share about that story is like, it's just perfect, you know?
Oh, good. Good.
Where can people find the book?
The book can be ordered as a written copy, and that you go to www.hindsightbook.com. www.hindsightbook.com. And I've done a performance audio of this whole book, which we can't, it's more than an audio book. I got to call it a performance because it's me doing what I've been doing for you for the last hour and a half. only I'm reading the whole book and talk about a role. I've rehearsed my whole life to play this part.
Is that available? So
yeah.
Okay.
And I'm about to tell everybody where. You go to Howie Gordon, all lowercase, HOWIEGORDON, HowieGordon.bandcamp, one word, all lowercase, BANDCAMP, bandcamp.com. HowieGordon.bandcamp.com. And you'll be greeted with three pictures. One is a song I wrote and performed. It's a rap song about a scene from the movie that never came out. I call the song The Lioness and the Rabbit, because that's what it was like the first time I fucked Seika. She was the lioness and I was the rabbit. Funny song. And then the middle thing is Hindsight. And the one on the far right is the second book I wrote, which has nothing to do with the pornography at all. It's called Return to Squirrel Hill. And it's a great book too, but we'll talk about that some other time.
Awesome. Well, Howie, thank you so much for giving me your time tonight. You lived up to all, actually exceeded any expectations I may have had for this interview. So thank you so much.
I'm so pleased. Cause you know, like I said, we've been dancing around this for like 10 years.
Yeah, so I know it finally happened.
Yeah, it is. And I'm glad. I've been grateful for your support, your appreciation, and you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.